Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Chris Hansen. Chris Hansen is an award-winning filmmaker, professor, and chairman of film and digital media at Baylor. His films, which have been screened at festivals throughout the U.S. and Canada, released theatrically and reviewed in the L.A. Times, Village Voice, and more, include The Proper Care and Feeding of an American Messiah, Clean Freak, Endings, Where We Started, and Blur Circle. His films have featured Baylor students in roles throughout the production, providing them with real-world experience in filmmaking. He spent a number of his summers here at Baylor making these films. A little different this summer, and we're glad to have you on the program. Chris Hansen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So going back a little bit, just to let people know a fun little personal tidbit, I'm 99% sure I was a student in the very first class that you taught at Baylor. And if it was not the very first class, it was the second, because I had you at 9 a.m. on a Monday that first year you were here. So if you didn't have an 8 a.m. class that first year you were here, then I was a student in the very first class you taught. So that's a point of pride.
What class was that?
It was a film law class. I think it was it was a topics class, and it was all about the production process. And,
yep.
You know,
that's the only time
permits.
I taught that class. It was like producing, like legal issues and producing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I enjoyed that. And you had toddlers at home, and now you've got students at Baylor. So I guess a lot has changed for both of us.
We've both gotten old.
That's true. But it's great to have you on the program. I've enjoyed your films, and certainly having you in class and knowing you over the years. Which of those films that I just mentioned have you shot here in Waco with Baylor students?
Those were all shot in Waco with Baylor students. Only one of them, called Clean Freak, that was a short film. The others are all feature films. And so Clean Freak was done, you know, more on the fly as we could shoot things during the semester. But the rest of them were all shot in the summer, all with student films, working as crew and often acting in them as well.
Well, we're going to talk about that process and what that looks like a little bit later on in the program. But I want to benefit from your expertise over as we talk about the film industry more broadly here. Summer movies. Yeah, I know it's something at some point probably everyone has a blockbuster that they're going to go see. First, is there anything on your radar, anything you're looking forward to seeing or that you've seen recently?
Well, okay, so the interesting, there's a debate a lightly debated topic of when does the summer movie season start? Mm-hmm. And Marvel, with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, has been pushing it earlier and earlier. So they released their Endgame, which was the kind of culminating 22nd film in the series of films in April, late April. And so there was a debate about, wait, is summer movie season starting in April? Because it's not even close to summer. And granted, summer doesn't start officially till June, but the summer movie season usually starts in May. But now Marvel's been pushing it back to third week of April.
Yeah.
So Endgame was a great, great summer movie. What else is coming? Toy Story 4 just opened as we're recording this, and the only reason I haven't seen that yet is because part of my family's out of town, and I have to wait till they get mm-hmm. home because we cannot go see that movie separately. So,
what makes a film a summer movie, whether it's released in April or July or August?
Summer movies, from the Hollywood perspective, are usually the movies that they anticipate are going to be what we think of as big blockbusters. They're going to draw the largest audience. Often, not always, but often, it's because it has wide appeal to every quadrant of the film-going audience. It's going to bring in adults, but it's also going to appeal to children. And so when you have that wide appeal, you have the largest possible audience to go see it. Toy Story 4, most of the Pixar films mm-hmm. usually are what they think of as four-quadrant films. They really are appealing for adults. They're not kiddie films. These films have emotional resonance. I have myself have cried at a number of Pixar films, mm-hmm. But the children love them as well because of the storytelling and the way that it appeals to children. So when you think of the summer movie season, it's the films that are going to appeal to the largest number of people, and in part because students are out of school, and so they're thinking about going to see movies or what are they going to do with their leisure time. And adults have a little bit more leisure in the summer to mm-hmm. do those kinds of things.
Adults want to find something to entertain their kids at times,
right.
And the movie's often a good
especially
good
in
place
Texas
to do that.
With the heat, and there's air conditioning in
there. That's true. So. You can get inside and enjoy it. Now, you know, we talk about different elements of film. There's independent film, mm-hmm. art film. When we talk about a summer movie, you know, that almost sounds sugary in a way, right? Because right. It almost could sound like pejorative. But yet when you talk about those movies, say Pixar, you know, the emotional resonance of them, what are some things that elevate a summer movie beyond just that mere title to something that, beyond just that mass appeal that really can speak to people?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pixar is a great example because it's emotionally resonant storytelling. And I think that we think of big blockbuster summer movies as movies with a lot of spectacle. And don't get me wrong, that's usually a big part of, I mean, Endgame is a good example. There's tons of spectacle in Endgame. But it's also, and you know, different people are going to disagree on whether or not this is a good movie or a bad movie. I personally am a fan of the Marvel movies overall. That doesn't mean I think all of them are perfect or great, but overall, I think they've maintained a level of quality that in the storytelling that I think was interesting. And Endgame was this really terrific culmination that had a lot of spectacle,
mm-hmm.
As befits a, I don't know what the budget was, but probably $250 million movie. But it also had these threads of characters that you were connected to that had stories that were wrapping up and, you know, you were really kind of people were passionate about. And I think that the best movies overall, regardless of whether they're summer movies, big blockbusters, or independent films, are films that connect the audience to the characters and create a sense of empathy. I think that's what movies do best, is help you have empathy with the characters in the movie. So any movie that does that can be a good movie, whether it's a summer movie or an mm-hmm. independent film.
We're visiting with filmmaker Chris Hansen, chair of Baylor's Film and Digital Media, and we are talking movies with him. Summer movie examples throughout history. Do you have a few favorites, a few that are in your canon?
Yeah, well, I was thinking back about summer movies since I knew we were going to talk about them, and I remembered there were some summers when I was a young man, I guess a teenager, and I remember when Batman came out in the summer of 1989, and so I remember that in part because people are talking about how it's the 30th anniversary of Batman coming
out.
And I'm like, oh man, I remember that so well. The hype around that movie was ridiculous, and I remember going and just being bowled over by it. It was the perfect summer movie, and I remember Terminator 2 coming out after Terminator had kind of become a cult hit on home video, as we called it back then.
Yeah.
And Terminator 2 came out, and it was just this huge summer blockbuster. And I remember seeing that with my brother. And then there's some that kind of slipped under the radar, like Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, which I didn't know, like as a young man at that time, I wasn't studying film yet, you know. So I knew who Clint Eastwood was as an actor, and I didn't really know who he was as a director, even though he'd been directing for years. I just really wasn't tuned into that. And then I went to see Unforgiven, not really being a Western fan, and was blown away by this movie that ended up becoming a, you know, Oscar winner and everything. So, there's tons of great summer movies throughout the modern studio era.
Sure.
And those are some of my favorites.
Well, those are a few right there that people could check out as examples, or if a trip down memory lane in
right.
some cases. A lot of fun opportunities there. But, you know, as we talk about summer movies, you know, I think we picture going to the movie theater, getting the popcorn, and that's certainly a part of the experience. But the game's really been changing in a lot of ways. And now some of these movies are being delivered right to people's homes, certainly television programs as well through Netflix and Amazon. And as you've got a dual perspective because you work with the industry, you're teaching students, future professionals to mm-hmm. be ready for this industry that they're going to enter. How are Amazon and Netflix changing the game, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I've been at Baylor for 15 years, and it's like completely changed, you know. So Netflix, I think, existed as a DVD rental service when I got here, but the streaming was completely new. And you know, people didn't think it was going to take off, and certainly I think the technology that people had in their homes had to catch up, but it has caught up in a big way. And so, and I love going to, and I want to give you some perspective here. I love going to the movie theater. I went yesterday, mm-hmm. and but the movie theater experience is more challenging these days because people bring their cell phones. People don't have the same manners that they used to, and they talk in movie theaters. And so for people like me, it's like sometimes I just feel like, do I really want to go and sit there and worry about these people, or should I wait and watch it on my home system? But we're barraged with stuff, right? I mean, I'm making a decision between going to see a movie in the theater and, you know, 100,000 things that are available on Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. So how do you make those decisions? Well, I think what's interesting is that Netflix and Amazon and the other streaming services have really started to focus on original programming. So Netflix built its model on, you know, airing reruns of Friends and other shows that were not available other places. But as the studios or the networks realized, oh, we can monetize these things ourselves by creating a streaming service, then Netflix and Amazon have started to move towards original product, their own original content that they're creating. So what's interesting is that they're starting to act more like studios and creating original content. And the studios and networks are realizing that they need to start acting like Netflix and start streaming stuff. So it's really we're kind of in a swirl of not knowing exactly how this is all going to change or exactly what's going to happen when it shakes out. But Netflix and Amazon and services like that are really providing a kind of a haven for creatives who want to do more interesting and nuanced material than they're able to do at the studios. Because the studios, they're looking at creating the largest pot of money they can from a film. So they're focusing on intellectual property that people already know, that's already in your headspace. Marvel, you know, Cinematic Universe or DC Comics or an adaptation of a very famous book, or that's what they're interested in for the most part. So Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, they're saying, well, we can get this great creator who wants to do something, and we don't care if it's original, because we don't have to get butts in the seats. It's as long as people are subscribing to the service, that pays for it. So it's really changing in that sense, that it's, you know, you're seeing a gravitation of creative talent to go towards those services. And also you're seeing these mergers like Disney buying everything up, because they it's all about content, and you have to own the content that people want to see. So Disney buys Marvel, and Disney buys Fox, and Disney buys Star Wars. And now they own all of that content. And then what does Disney do? Well, Disney's creating their own streaming service starting in, I think, November. And that will be the only place you can see all that content by that point. So everybody's going to have to subscribe to Disney if they want to see that, or all the new shows they're creating that are Star Wars-oriented shows or Marvel shows that nobody has seen yet. So it's shaking up to be kind of these giants buying up everything versus, you know, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon saying, well, what content are we going to have if Marvel's going to, or if Disney's going to take all the Marvel stuff away, or Disney's going to take all the Star Wars stuff away? So what are we going to have? We're going to have to create original content.
Very interesting. We're visiting with Chris Hansen from Baylor Film and Digital Media, a longtime filmmaker and professor here at Baylor. Does that change the way storytelling, not just the industry itself, but when you think about the way people watch now, they're on their phones at the movie theater, now you can pause and get up, or you'll be distracted by your pet or a child or what have you. Does that change the way storytelling happens at all, or does it have the potential to?
I think it does. I actually teach a graduate seminar about that's called Storytelling in the 21st Century. That's really about that subject. And it is given, for example, the concept for the course started with binge watching on Netflix. It's a concept that, you know, probably existed with the with DVDs and VHS tapes of shows, but most people didn't watch that way. Mm-hmm. But Netflix, they have a new season of a show and they drop all the episodes all at once. So you're not watching week by week. You have everything to watch, and people are compelled by these shows. People started binging them and watching them all in, you know, 3 days. And I listened to an interview with the creator of Orange is the New Black, which is a show on Netflix that's going into its final season. And she was talking about after the first season how, like, we spent so much time making these shows and people are watching them and they're done and they're like, when are more coming out? And she was like, wait, I'm not ready for this. And then also other people were discovering them months later. And so there was no, you know, everybody didn't have the shared knowledge to talk about at the same time. So she said it's kind of, for a creator, more like writing a novel. And yeah, there's a bunch of people who read it as soon as it comes out in hardback, but then there's a bunch of people who read it on paperback, and then there's a bunch of people who discover it years later. And so she had to think about the storytelling in that form, that people are just going to watch it in their own way and experience it in their own way. And also the fact that for her, you know, writing a regular series that occurs week after week, you know, you have to remind people who this character is. So this character has to appear every week, even if they're not crucial to that week's story. But if you know people are going to be binge watching, you can have a whole hour where certain characters don't appear because, you know, everybody's just going to keep watching. So it really, in her mind, it kind of changed the way, because people experience the story so differently, it changes it. Two, I'd say with cell phones and tablets, you know, how do you – I'm a filmmaker working in post-production on a film, and we're – I'm talking with the director of photography who's also doing the color grading. Like, well, where's this film going to live? How are people going to see it? You know, they're going to see it on big screens and film festivals, and hopefully we get a release. But eventually, they're going to be watching it on, you know, Amazon Prime and maybe on their laptop screen. Or they might be watching it on a tablet or on a phone. And, like, how do you make a film that fits on all of those platforms? It's very hard.
Wow. A lot to think about as we visit with Chris Hansen. This is Baylor Connections, talking to Chris Hansen, Baylor filmmaker and chair of Baylor Film and Digital Media. And Chris, we head into the final few minutes of the program. That gives us a chance to talk a little bit about, as you're in post-production on a film, you've worked with students on this and a number of other films. And what's that look like? Paint that picture for us of how you've kind of been able to put this process together.
Sure. Our students take courses in the summer, and basically we tell them, you know, we're making a film. Your job is to work on this film. And we hire professionals at key positions like director of photography and the sound mixer. And these are people usually who are either Baylor alumni or they have worked with us before, so they know the students or know what working with students is like. And then our students become our crew, and so they're boom operators holding microphones, or they're helping set up lights, and they're learning these positions as we go. And fortunately, they're learning from professionals who are leading over them and then often rotating to different positions after 4 days or a week or whatever. So, you know, we want them to have, in addition to us having a good experience of making the movie, we want them to have a learning experience that they really understand the different parts of this process.
And, you know, probably should be obvious, but let's just say it plainly. I mean, this is real experience. This mm-hmm. is real. If someone doesn't show up that day,
yeah.
it has an impact on everybody else. I mean, is it the kind of thing that, I mean, it's pressure. There's pressure
yes.
there. Is that the kind of pressure that students have to be prepared for that you can't get any other way?
Yeah, that's part of the experience, is that people are depending on you. You're doing a job. You know, there are times when, as a director, I've gotten not frustrated by a student even, but frustrated by the weather and, you know, angry. And we're trying to rush to get something before the clouds, you know, come over. Mm-hmm. and then we don't get it done. And, you know, I've gotten frustrated. Brian, who's another faculty member, Brian Elliott, who has produced all the films, you know, he says that's good for them to see. They need to see how hard you have to work to get something done, and how when you don't, there are consequences. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, like you said, weather sometimes
yep.
change. I mean, you shoot these on location in Waco. I've seen
yeah.
you downtown and in different corners of different neighborhoods. How is it? It's got to be kind of, I would think, a fun challenge, those puzzle pieces together. If you're setting the movie here, how do you make that? How do you make that work?
Yeah, it is. Locations are always the hardest part. We often are trying to secure locations right up until the moment we start shooting and then changing locations. We've had locations drop out on us during the shoot. So that's the biggest puzzle, I think, throughout making one of our films is how do we get all the locations we need without having to travel too far, because we have the students and, you know, we'd have to rent a charter bus or something to take them somewhere. And we're shooting 10-hour days, you know, we have to stay close. And, that, you know, Waco has a ton of different kinds of locations that we can make use of. So, and people are great here about giving us the opportunity to shoot there. I mean, we end up shooting overnight in certain mm-hmm. locations because, you know, if we were going to shoot in a surgical center, we can't be there during the day. Okay. But we were able to shoot there, and they were wow. very gracious, and we shot, you know, overnight, and it was terrific.
That's great. Visiting with Chris Hansen, and Chris, as we head into the final couple of minutes, do you have a favorite moment, memory, or just theme, anecdote of working with students? And then do you have a film of your own that is a personal favorite, or is that too hard to pick from?
Oh, that would be hard. Mm-hmm. I think for favorite film, it's always the one I'm working on right now.
Yeah, so, that makes sense.
And the new one is called Seven Short Films About Our Marriage. It's a feature film about a married couple. And, Yeah, I'm very passionate about it because I believe in the story. But I love all of them. I like to think that I've gotten better with each one. And my wife, when I told my wife that, she said, "Well, of course." I think in terms of favorite memories, we've had some great experiences. I loved on my film Where We Started. The director of photography of that was a former student of mine. It was the first time that I had hired a former student to come back and be that professional in that position. Taylor Rudd was that student, and he just did a fantastic job, and I worked really well with him. And that was a great experience. Another great experience is a couple of students who worked on one of my film's endings. They met on the set of the film. And they are married now and have a child.
Oh, wow.
So I like to think I had a small hand in that.
You get an assist.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. They gave me credit for that. Just in general, we've had so many experiences with students realizing what they do and they don't want to do in the industry as a result of working on the films. I mean, I remember one who, he loved cameras and camera operating, but he really wanted to try something different. And so he worked as an assistant director on our first film. And by the end of it, and I know this is going to sound the opposite of what you asked, but at the end of it, he was like, "Well, I do not want to do that." Yeah. And he went back into camera work, and now he's freelance cinematographer. He's worked all over the world. And I think of that as a total win because, mm-hmm. He wanted to stretch himself and try other things. But then by the end of it, he realized, this is where my talent and my passion lies, and I'm going to keep doing that. And I think those kinds of experiences happen all the time.
Well, there's obviously some big names that have come from Baylor in the film industry, John Lee Hancock, Derek Hass, Michael Brandt, and others. But there's a lot of people whose names we either don't know now or might someday know who have worked on these films and who are expanding what Baylor FDM does and its footprint in L.A., and that's neat to see. Well, great. Well, Chris Hansen, I wish we had more time.
Me too.
We are just about out of time talking filmmaking with you. So 7 short films about our marriage. I don't know if I should put you on the spot and ask, do you know about when we might be seeing some of that?
We are hoping to have it completely done by the end of the summer, and then it'll be going out to film festivals and hopefully screening in Waco at our film festival, the Deep in the Heart Film Festival here. Mm-hmm. That's certainly on our submission list.
Yes. So. Well, I follow you on obviously social media and see what that process looks like. It's a long process that has more tentacles than most of us would ever realize over the course of that. But best of luck at that.
Thank you very much.
We'll look forward to that. Chris Hansen, filmmaker and chairman of film and digital media at Baylor, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. Reminder, you can hear this and other programs online, baylor.edu/connections. Thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.